Station. Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in. It is the Thursday edition of The Drive, and a completely different looking day than we've had. I mean, I've thought it was going to rain all day. Felt a couple of raindrops a couple of times. It's been just sort of overcast, cloudy, and about 20 degrees cooler than the last few days. Now, it's muggy. It's humid, but, it is Thursday. We're getting close to the weekend. Welcome in to The Drive on this Thursday afternoon with Bill and Dan.
I mean, we're almost done with June, Bill. I mean, we were talking about absolutely. It. I mean, it's powering through. You're seeing more back to school stuff on your commercial breaks, and I mean, just more reminders that you're coming up on. I mean, the preview and preseason chatter is going to kick into high gear over the next few weeks. Obviously the NBA draft going on, I guess, right now, you know, between the first and second rounds. But we're rapidly approaching the start of next season, and we're right in the thick of summer right now.
Yes, we are, and it's today's been a little day of respite. We're not in the mid 90s, so enjoy it. But welcome in. I was thinking a couple of hours ago, we can talk about the NBA draft last night, and then hopefully Jani Broome going in round two this evening.
He's in the green room. He's going to be at the he's one of the dozen or so players they've invited to sit in the green room for the draft. So one would think there's a reasonable expectation that Jani is going to hear his name called sometime in the second round. You know, I think a lot of folks think maybe in the first half of the second round, but it would be great to see Jani come off the board.
I've seen him projected anywhere. Yesterday, I think it was CBS. I think yesterday CBS had him projected 33rd. I've seen him anywhere 33 to 44, somewhere. I mean, just somewhere in the second round, and you hope so. But I was thinking, and other than that, there's not much to talk about. But lo and behold, Auburn adds a football commitment, a quarterback commitment this afternoon.
Yeah, so it's a we were talking to Brian and Jason about the possibility of flips, you know, of things happening. Where, I mean, yes, you know, a lot of the recent flip adjacent news has been bad news.
Have been flipping away.
But the fact that Auburn could maybe poach somebody from one of these other schools, you know, someone who's seemingly not on the board right now. And you know, while I understand if there's a position where it feels like the transfer portal has taken. Has really taken charge, it's quarterback. When you think about the number of teams that have a quarterback starting this year that didn't sign with that team right out of high school, the prevalence of, you know, how commonplace it is to play for more than one team at quarterback in your college football career. I understand people, you have to keep a quarterback commitment in perspective. But at the same time, you were hoping for anything to change what seemed to be negative momentum on the recruiting trail, and Auburn flips Peyton Falzone.
Is a four-star quarterback from the state of Pennsylvania who had been committed to Penn State, and he flips and is now committed to Auburn. So I mean, we'll see that. You talk about one out of nowhere. It's not quite New Zealand, but I mean, that's not a name that I had heard anywhere. It'd been much, you know, on the radar with Auburn, but you want a quality quarterback at least one in every class.
Right, and this guy committed to his to a school in his home state. He'd been committed there since earlier this year. I get the sense from Penn State people that they felt pretty good about Falzone keeping his commitment. This sort of comes out of the blue where he decides he's going to he's going to go down south and play and change his commitment at least to Auburn. It's certainly better news than Auburn had been receiving on the recruiting trail in the last couple of weeks.
Well, yeah, I mean now Auburn picked up. I mentioned New Zealand, the big offensive lineman and Nico Heppe. So they've added a couple of commitments after they lost three. Auburn had lost three commitments over about a 10-day span heading into Sunday, and now the last. Heading into Tuesday or Wednesday, now they've added a couple of guys back.
Yeah, I think about what Jason said yesterday too. The size, the overall size of Auburn's high school class could be smaller than it's been in recent years. He thought that there's not only do you have to be more selective. Because you've cut down on the number of players leaving the roster churn, you don't have the glaring needs all over the roster that you did a couple of years ago. But you're also probably saving you're saving some of that juice for players you may need to attract in the transfer portal. And so it's it's certainly good news. To go get a quarterback recruit,
yeah.
And you get the sense Hugh Freeze wants to land a blue chip quarterback as part of his recruiting class. He wants to get a quarterback that could eventually grow into your starter seems to be a goal every year for Hugh Freeze. At least one of those out of high school, and with Peyton, it seems like he's maybe found one.
Yeah, he's a big kid. He's listed 6'5", 205. I have not
top 15 nationally at his position.
I've seen one of the services has him the number 14 quarterback. Yeah. I have not watched any video of him. That's something that I'd like to do before I talk about. I don't know what to expect as far as his style and what type quarterback he is.
I know he's run for over 1,000 yards the last 2 years.
That's good. That's a good sign.
That's from Adam Cole's Montgomery Advertiser story that he's got over 1,000 yards. I think combined the last two seasons, he's rushed for over. I think he's going into his third year as a starter, and he has
over 1,000 yards in his career.
He has in two seasons at Nazareth. Nazareth High School in Pennsylvania. He's got 4,663 yards passing and 1,137 yards rushing. So he's recruiting services call him a dual threat guy. You mentioned that he's a big, mm-hmm. A big 6'5 quarterback, but I think Hugh Freeze would like, sort of a do it all, being able to extend plays at least with your legs, if not go and break long runs, is a prerequisite if you want to play quarterback for Hugh Freeze. And sounds like this guy fits the bill.
Yeah, this past year, I'm looking. I can see his stats from this past year. He was the MVP of his conference. Passed for 2,135 yards, 23 touchdowns, 4 interceptions, and had 697 yards rushing.
And again, it's a nice pickup when you. I think the reality of it now is when you're talking about a kid signing, when you're probably thinking that someone like this is 2 years away or so, right? I mean, you sometimes see true freshmen on the field, but it certainly checks off a box that Hugh Freeze would want to check off with his 2026 recruiting class. He's going to have. And allows him, unless there's some other superstar quarterback that suddenly comes into the picture, this would allow him to focus on some other things in the class, right? Feels like you have a quarterback, and now it's sort of look at the other positions of need, the other priorities for Auburn as far as whatever they want to, whatever they want the 26 class to include.
Yeah, Auburn had been mentioned with quite a few different guys at quarterback. Obviously, they'd been recruiting Peyton. Peyton had committed, I didn't realize this. He committed first to Virginia Tech. He was a Virginia Tech commitment, flipped to Penn State, and has now flipped to Auburn. So we'll see if that's where he winds up.
So don't necessarily tattoo his name on your arm quite yet. You know what I mean? He could still make a decision to go play somewhere else between now and again, you know, I'm not calling for a rules change or anything. But that's one of the things that, as far as like freshmen being able to leave and go play wherever you want, it's taken a little bit of the sting out of high school recruiting
because you have.
I mean,
it's, and we've seen some that have moved on before the season.
Sure, and I'm not necessarily like that's not a reason to restrict player movement. Like recruiting was more fun is not a reason to say, well, you have to sit out. You should have to sit out if you transfer or anything like that. Yeah, but I can understand why. You know, on a more serious, like competitive level, coaches are less likely to recruit high schoolers by and large, right? If you've got the transfer portal option available, and you've got, it feels like you have no guarantee that your freshmen are going to stick around. Like it would, I can understand why coaches would, especially coaches under pressure to win right now. Would think about the portal as opposed to getting the best possible players out of high school and waiting on them to turn into college level players. Even though sometimes we had a caller yesterday mention sometimes the development, like being able to start the development earlier, can get you more years of a better player. They don't pick up.
Oh yeah, you would prefer to bring them in and have them learn under your system and develop. I mean, and that's what Hugh Freeze has said from the outset. That's what he wants to be the primary source of the talent on his team. But when you have the opportunity to go out and add someone who is already better than anybody you have at the position, you'd better do it.
Certainly. But I think Hugh Freeze and a lot of coaches who believe themselves to be developers, think about Butch in baseball this year, right? Like it would have been so easy to go to the portal and find more experienced options than Chris Rembert and Bub Terrell. Like there were infielders and outfielders out there in the portal. I'm not intimately familiar with the baseball portal, but I would think, Bill, that like last year, Butch Thompson could have said, well, I'm under pressure after this season. I need to go find experienced guys instead of Bub Terrell and Chris Rembert.
Chris Rembert and Chase Fraley.
He believed in his own ability to spot talent and develop guys.
Go out and add. I mean, he went out and got Eric Snow.
Oh,
I
sure.
Mean, they got a few pieces.
Dutton. I mean, there's absolutely pieces from the portal that came in and helped too. But I think if you believe in yourself as a developer, You're probably making a mistake if you believe in yourself as a developer and you decide, well, I'm not going to recruit high schoolers anymore. I'm going to turn my back on that element of the game.
I mean, unless you have a situation where you know that there's no way that a high schooler that a freshman's going to be able to break in and play for you the next year.
Then you'd
have to be content with taking guys who are okay with waiting their time.
Yeah, I'd say that's probably true, although even in the case of like Auburn, like there was competition in Auburn baseball. Like there was competition for those jobs, and Rembert and Bub Terrell showed up and ended up being
Chase Fraley took over the catching.
I was going to say there were veteran options. Those guys had to compete.
Because the thought
with.
Was Ike's going to be your catcher.
Yeah.
Speaking of Ike, consensus All-American, congratulations to Ike Irish. I found a couple of scouting reports on Peyton Falzone. We can read those for you, as well as we learn more about the young man who is the latest football commitment for Auburn. We're just underway here on the Thursday Drive. Bill and Dan with Drew at the controls. 334-321-1390 is the Drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar. We'd love for you to join us.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
We'll get to our first break of the afternoon. Come on in and join us here on the Thursday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck.
From all the
and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Thursday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio. Drew at the controls. Love for you to join in. I was looking to try to find my my depth chart so I could sort of look at the breakdown of players by class in on the Auburn football roster. And now there may have been a change or two. This one was from back in March. So I've got Auburn with either around 17 or 18 seniors. So depending on the roster size, and that's something I was just asking you, Dan. I mean, do we know?
I've heard nothing but 105 since the settlement. Like I've heard that it's 105 guaranteed scholarships. Like that's
I've heard
roster limit of 105. You can have up to 105 players.
And
on
all
the football
of those
team
can
be on full scholarship.
Could have scholarship.
Yes.
Even though football can go partial. Now, I have
and they
heard...
But now keep in mind, crucially, just because you're on the team and just because you're on scholarship... Does not entitle you to a dollar of the...
Revenue share.
The $20.5 million revenue share.
No,
right. Yeah, you said something in the week about someone using... Was maybe even at Auburn using...
No, it was Wimp. Wimp Sanderson said, or Barry Sanderson, said that Greg Byrne had been on their show and said they were going to go an extra $2.5 million in scholarships, which would come off of the revenue share.
So maybe that's just how they're going to budget. Like they're going to kick some extra money and call it scholarships, but it's going
to
be part of their...
Add scholarships to other sports from that revenue sharing,
The part that's puzzling is using any of your $20.5 million to that purpose, because it seems like you could do that and spend $20.5 million in revenue sharing.
It does.
Like
yes.
That's the only part of like hearing about that's like that's an odd strategy, because you can do that without having it count against the $20.5 million, if I understand
correctly. All that would be going to non-revenue sports, all the sports that, of course, I mean, everybody's got to do that. You're right. Everybody's going to have to do that anyway.
But I'd heard 105 as a limit.
The max is the cap. But I have heard
the rule was 85. The rule was 85, right?
Right. It was 85 scholarships.
Yes.
And 105 on your roster once the season began. Remember, you could have 120 going through fall camp until classes started, then 105 during, you know, once classes started. I have also heard, but have not seen any confirmation, that the SEC and other conferences may very well go a total number of scholarships less than 105, but a 105 roster limit and being able to use partial scholarships. Well, I mean, for what I've heard, has been either 90... you know, around 90 or 95 scholarships spread over 105 players.
And my assumption would be that would be a cost-cutting move, just because there's...
Well, if the conference agrees, here's what I have heard some people that are close to athletics directors say, that, look, it's been an 85 scholarship limit, so those are basically your scholarship players. The other 20 players on your roster of 105 have been walk-ons, and you could add 10 scholarships, split halfway, and reward those walk-ons with a half scholarship.
That's sort of what I was going to say, is you can give as much of a scholarship as you want, and I think the decision would be like, yes, you could give the 20 extra players that aren't on scholarship
you could
give them full scholarships, or you could give them partial scholarships and sort of like, and I think that's sort of the, and I would think that would have to do with cost.
Yes.
Like that would be the decision to go full or partial with players who aren't currently on scholarship or on full scholarship would be.
And that, I believe, would also be something you'd be concerned with Title IX. Because if you went to 105 football scholarships, you'd have to have those extra scholarships available for women's sports as well. But if you went to 90 or 95, then that's only 10 extra scholarships that you've got to have. For every scholarship that you're adding on the men's side, you'd need to add one on the women's
side. I can understand that, you know, there are schools that are probably in a position where they don't want to get rid of their walk-ons, but they also are not necessarily in the appetite to put all of their walk-ons on full scholarship. Mm-hmm. And finding a compromise, finding something that fits the rules while also allowing them to keep the program sort of close to where they are now. I think that's probably where we're headed. Because I mean, keep in mind, like, the delay had to do with 5,000 or so student athletes that were looking like they were going to lose either their scholarships or their roster spots with the implementation of these limits. I think they're trying to prevent that as best they can, but that doesn't necessarily mean everybody's on full scholarship.
No, or everybody's sharing in the revenue. Now, one of the I was mentioning a little while ago, I'd found a couple of write-ups. 247, and of course, Jason Caldwell yesterday is with 247. They rank Peyton Falzone as the number 11 quarterback for the 2026 class, the number 4 prospect in the state of Pennsylvania. And here is what 247's director of scouting, Andrew Irvins, wrote about his evaluation of Peyton Falzone. He goes, he writes, and I quote, "Athletic signal caller with a budding frame that has some of the characteristics required to do damage in a modern spread attack. Checks off the multi-sport participation box in style with a rare sprinting and swimming background."
Oh, how about that?
So he's a sprinter. He's a track sprinter. That is something, you know, when I heard the name and I heard he's from Pennsylvania and I saw a picture of him, I thought he's probably a drop back quarterback. Had not thought about him. He's tall too.
I feel like by and large, and yes,
usually the tall guys you think of more as just pocket.
Yeah, there are exceptions, but I feel like generally, you know, the taller you are as a quarterback, the less likely you are to be a scrambler or a big play threat with your legs. For this guy to have, you know, a background outside of football as an athlete in some pretty grueling,
that's pretty interesting,
some pretty grueling sports,
track and swimming, and a sprinter in track.
Yeah, and to have that kind of background and, you know, over 1,000 yards on the ground the last two seasons.
Yeah, nearly 700 yards as a junior.
Yeah, I mean,
let's see, Ivins, is the director of scouting, Andrew Ivins, writes, "He isn't the most fine-tuned passer at this stage, but showed noticeable improvement between his sophomore and junior seasons as he was able to accurately feather the football to deeper parts of the field, while using both touch and trajectory to advantage." And then he finishes by saying, "Not one to panic in the face of pressure, can frequently buy himself time as he darts away from defenders and extends plays. We'll need to keep working on mechanics and learn how to operate from the pocket on a more consistent basis, but should be viewed as a potential multi-year starter at the Power 4 level with true dual threat capabilities that can light up the scoreboard with both his arms and legs."
Yeah, and again, this is a
pretty good evaluation.
Well, not, and this is the kind of quarterback that I think, I mean, what one would expect nowadays, Hugh Freeze is going to take one quarterback in his, you know, from high school in his recruiting classes, and this is the kind of quarterback that he would want. I mean, you'd want a guy who profiles as a top 10, top 15 guy in his class, a guy who could be a starter someday and maybe someday
soon.
Yeah,
good enough to start for multiple years, and you've got, all right, so you have Jackson Arnold, who has 2 years of eligibility. I mean, you've got Ashton Daniels, who has 1 year, but then you have Deuce Knight, who has 4 years of eligibility. So after this year, and it's funny, I've heard some talk of, well, what if Jackson comes back and he's not that good? Well, if he's not that good and Auburn's not that good, I don't know who's coming back.
Yeah.
I mean, players, coaches, there'll be a lot of people that may not be back.
I'd make sure I'm bolted down or else I'm...
Hey, what you almost hope is that Jackson Arnold is the real deal and he's having to consider whether or not he's going pro after this year. And then you're looking at the possibility of Deuce Knight, who you hope gets some time this year. And you'd have a guy there behind him. I would think you'd probably, in a situation like that, you'd probably want to bring in another experienced type guy to compete. But yeah, I mean, if next year you know, Deuce Knight's ready to try to step in. Then you've got a guy who's behind him learning, and according to the evaluations, could probably use another year, you know, developing. But sounds like he's got pretty good tools.
Yeah, and I'm not sure how much bandwidth Hugh Freeze has right now for, like, what does the quarterback room look like in 2026?
No,
right? Because he's got other things to worry about.
He needs to be bringing in players,
but he does. But he does have.
The most important thing is 2025.
But right now he's got a situation where potentially you've got Jackson Arnold and Deuce Knight and this fella in the quarterback room in 2026, which is a nice place to be potentially. Now we'll see.
Yeah, you'd have a second year starter, a second year player, and a freshman.
Yes, and no matter what happens this season, no matter what happens this year, Jackson will have a decision to make, and Deuce will have a decision to make. Right? I mean, that's the way it is in college football. Everybody's got one, so they'll make a decision, but you know. You might have one or both of those guys back. You might have Peyton, not that Peyton, but you might have you might have this new fella in the quarterback room as well. And there could, and they might not be finished, right? I mean, if it's just Deuce and Peyton, maybe there's the thought that you need more experience or you need someone else in there competing. To make sure that you've truly got the right option, depending on how much you see Deuce in 2025. But no, I think you know certainly you want to be looking ahead a little bit. But the thought of building like multi-year bridges, right? Now that everyone's got a decision to make, you can't be sure, but you love to have a situation where potentially you've got all those guys. In that room next season.
Yeah, you can't not be making those preparations, but you can't be just looking too far ahead.
Well, because then you set up a situation where you're living and dying by the portal, mm-hmm. right? Where it's like, all right, well, we've got huge. You go into every season feeling good about your roster, with the understanding in December there are going to be these giant gaping holes that you have to try to fill. And that's great until it doesn't work, right? Until you have a season where you miss on a couple of guys or a couple of guys get hurt and your lack of depth mm-hmm. gets exposed. And I mean, I think it's certainly building a class with a blend of experienced veterans and high school players and blue chippers like that. That seems to be the way that, you know, the safest way to guard yourself from a huge drop off.
All right, we'd love your thoughts. What do you think about the latest pickup there? Anything on your mind sports-wise? We're halfway through hour number one, so come on in and join us here on the Thursday Drive. Thursday Drive, Bill and Dan here in the studio, and Drew at the controls, and let's get to the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar, and Daniel is up first. Hey, Daniel.
Hey, guys. I hope y'all are enjoying this cooler day today.
Much, absolutely.
Man, I know I am as well. I wanted to bring up a speculation that I have that I'm just very curious to hear y'all's thoughts on within the draft last night and tonight and the different trades that have gone on between Kevin Durant and him going to Houston and Jalen Green going out to Phoenix. Specifically around Jalen Green, I was with a buddy a few days ago, and we were talking about the correlation between Jalen Green's decision to go to the G League Ignite team mm-hmm. and also the decision between NIL being passed. And I thought that was very interesting. I wonder what the timeline is. Because I know he was considering Auburn when he was in high school.
Very much.
Played basketball at Auburn. and then all of a sudden, this G League team where you can skip college and get paid was made. And if I'm wrong, I think college and NCAA passed NIL not long after that. And I just wonder if that was almost a precursor that maybe was one of the reasons for NIL.
No, I think the lack of NIL in college had to do with why leagues like the G League Ignite were established. That and the age limits for the NBA draft, which was another thing. Even if you had NIL, I think you were going to be – I think I don't know if Jalen Green wanted to spend – like I think the year he would have had to spend in college rather than going to the NBA draft was going to be another problem with Jalen Green. But no, certainly like the – we mentioned it yesterday with Jake that the you're seeing careers extended in college athletics now in a way that you weren't seeing them even as recently as – 17, 18 Like, I think. How about this?
I think, it, and it's especially for the players who aren't going to be high well, in remember, high draft.
Remember
picks.
This: like Jarrett Stidham had a year of eligibility remaining, and went pro after the 18 season. Like, imagine what Jarrett Stidham after those 2 years at Auburn would have been worth on the open market in 19. Like, we just didn't see guys exhaust their eligibility the way we're seeing them now because. You could you I mean the amount of money was drastically different if you turned pro, you know, even if you weren't a priority in the draft, even if you were a guy that was going to go later in the draft, or even if you weren't going to go in the draft in the NBA and you were going to make a living in professional basketball, however you could. We're not seeing as much of that anymore. Jani Broome getting drafted tonight after 5 years, like Jani Broome,
Jani would have been gone last year. If they,
2 years ago. Yeah. I don't know if Auburn gets a second year.
You're right. Probably not, but he definitely would have been gone after last year without NIL.
Sure. Like I don't know if Auburn gets a second year of Jani Broome, let alone a third, without NIL. And I think it's had a huge impact on the way that I think college athletes approach how to, you know, whether or not to finish their careers in college or turn pro at the first opportunity.
Yeah. So did NIL start in 2019?
I want to say 19 was the first season where you had maybe 20. It's in that ballpark. I remember the Bo Nix Milo's tweet.
Right.
Like things start to change in that. Yeah, that
I was
19.
Thinking,
it,
I think, it was, I think
it's
I
later
think
than
after the 19.
It's not. Yeah. No. Because it's the season after Sharif. Right. Because you don't have because that's another one people have looked at where it's like if NIL had been available to Sharif Cooper, would he have extended his college basketball career beyond 1 year? And I think Jalen Green's another what if.
It says actually
21 well, maybe.
It says July 1st, 2021.
21, yeah. I associate it with Bo because of 19, but it's 21. You know, that midnight.
Yeah, 19, right. 19 was just Bo's freshman year.
Yeah, 21 was the – 21 was in Bo – July 21 is when Bo tweets out the Milo's thing.
Midnight,
right before his third season at Auburn, and yeah, was one of the first, you know, one of the first.
So yeah, you're right. I mean, a lot of the players that went to the G League to the G League, yeah, would have
sure
they would have been very highly sought after, and you know, colleges would have been more than competitive with what they were getting.
How about
G League Ignite?
Jared Harper had a year of eligibility left.
Yeah, like
Jared Harper went pro as a junior with a year left in college basketball. Hard to imagine the market for a Jared Harper type if he had decided he wanted to play another year of college basketball and the kind of schools, let alone what Auburn would have paid to keep him, but the value that he would have had potentially to other schools around the country. That's just one of a handful. I mean, you can pick dozens, you know, hundreds of players across sports that you could say that about, you know, who turned pro early, and you wonder, you know, what in this climate, what kind of money those guys could have made.
Right. I'm just speculating if maybe the G League Ignite initiative between drafting players out of high school and immediately them making money back in 2020, I think it was either 2020 or 2021 that was Jalen Green's class, but a specific player like him that, and forgive me guys, I'm out in the country right now, it was a specific player like him that, you know, maybe the NCAA saw that and went, man, we don't want to hurt our biggest moneymaker within the tournament. And do you think the NCAA was potentially concerned with that move that he made?
I mean, I think the NCAA had to be dragged into the NIL era like lawsuits.
Screaming and fighting and kicking.
But I think the lack of NIL led to the creation of it. And I think that certainly, and once the NCAA implemented NIL, the league went away. Like the G League Ignite's gone now because there wasn't really an avenue for players. Right.
They couldn't compete with the money
that
the college collectives and boosters.
I think the existence of competition for players like the G League Ignite probably, like, there was nothing like that for football, or else we would have seen movement, I think, a lot quicker. But no, I think it probably changed some minds as far as like a coach who didn't like NIL probably didn't like losing a player to the G League Ignite either.
Right.
And maybe that changed his mind about whether or not things in the college game needed to adjust.
Right. Maybe Bruce himself.
Maybe even Bruce Pearl. Maybe it changed Bruce Pearl. You know, I think Bruce, although one would say, I think Bruce was always in favor of ways to get the guys paid.
Yes.
Like, it's just, I mean, but you're right. I think that once Bruce realized that he and other college coaches could be competing against the NBA for their high school players,
mm-hmm.
like, you know, an actual NBA-owned and affiliated development league that can pay guys, you know, that probably changed things a little bit as far as the urgency to move along NIL and change the way that college basketball players can be compensated.
Just imagine without NIL. I mean, it's funny how some people have just decried it, and it's like, oh, it's just ruined everything. What would Auburn's roster have looked like last year
without NIL? In men's basketball? Sure. I mean, Bill, and I guess you have to factor in that, like, everybody's got NIL helping their rosters out, and it would be across the board. But Bill, think about the job. Hugh Freeze shows up in 23, like after the 22 season.
Oh, man, what would this football roster
think about trying to recruit football the last two years without NIL to help things along? Like, I think it would have been...
I don't think you would have been able to be competitive some of the games. Auburn's been competitive, and look, we're talking about games they should have, could have won. I don't know that we'd be talking about those.
No.
Without some of the guys that they've been able to bring in.
Yeah, no, I think it's not. I know the 23 roster isn't going to be remembered as like one of the great teams in Auburn history or anything. But as far as what it could have been, like what you were looking at in. You know, what the Bill Cameron depth chart looked like after the 22 Iron Bowl versus what that, like, yeah. I probably
got that somewhere.
And some of that clearly is Hugh Freeze and his coaching staff knowing how to evaluate and recruit and bringing in the right players and, you know, developing a message that sells, that lands. NIL played a big role too. Like NIL unquestionably played a big role in helping put some gas in that tank.
Yeah, I don't know that there'd been enough gas to even light it on fire.
You're running on empty.
Man, you're not kidding. Great stuff, Daniel. Appreciate the call. 334-321-1390. We'll get to our final break of hour number one. Love for you to join in as we continue with the Thursday Drive.
The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Thursday edition of The Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio. Drew at the controls. About 11 minutes away from 5 o'clock. Love for you to join in. Anything on your mind sports-wise?
No Ferguson today. He came in earlier in the week. He's out of town. He's venturing. I know
it's that time of year where you get a chance to get away for you got any vacay plans?
I don't know. I may hit the lake house up. We'll see what happens. But I'm probably not on the docket immediately.
Yeah. So I mean,
I did a lot of traveling.
Sort of a long weekend. Going to go Friday through Monday, so I won't be here tomorrow.
I did a lot of traveling during basketball season, and I'll be honest. Like, I can go another couple of months without eating a hotel breakfast. I'll be okay without making my own waffle and eating the wet eggs. I'll be fine. But the No, Ferguson.
Nice. I tell you what, though, it's nice when you stay at a place that at least has that
option. Oh, for sure. No, I love it.
That's something I definitely look at. It's like, oh, do we have a breakfast?
I love today? A continental breakfast. Oh, yeah. So Ferg is.
Where did that come? Where did that phrase come from?
Continental. I don't. Continental that's
breakfast. It sounds really.
Well, you have an English muffin, and you have the bananas, right? So it's from all over.
So from every, we have multiple continents.
Multiple continents are represented in the.
It just sounds. It sounds a little more extravagant or exotic than it usually is.
English muffins. I mean, it's the exotic.
It's something. It's something in the morning. I appreciate that.
English muffin, banana, frosted flakes. You know that exotic. Yeah. Exotic combination. All right, so Ferg's speaking at the Athens, Georgia Auburn Club.
Yeah, he said this is his first opportunity to do something like that.
Yeah, and I guess he's opening for Corey Williams, who's also going to speak at the event.
Corey.
I don't
like he's opening for Corey Williams.
Yeah, that's why. That's how I view it.
Our opening act.
Yeah. Ferg's gonna do a quick set, but the headliner is Corey Williams. But no, that's gonna be cool, and Ferg's gonna tell us about that when he's back. He's also visiting. Was that the Blue Ridge Mountains
Athens around Athens?
Well, he's headed up
north.
Yeah, it's on his way. Athens is on the way to wherever he's staying. I thought he's doing a mountain weekend with the misses and visiting Athens along the way. So yeah, we'll hear about that when we get Ferg again. But
yeah, I think it is.
Yeah, I rarely go that direction. Yeah, through Georgia.
They're in the lower part of the Appalachians.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's the that was like. Was it either a pre-Credence or just a John Fogerty stepping aside? I think it was Fogerty deciding to do something while Credence was still together.
Does he have a Blue Ridge song?
Ridge Rangers.
Oh, I didn't know this. Yeah,
Blue Ridge Rangers had a single like in the 70s, and you could tell it's like, wait, that's Credence. No, that's John Fogerty. Which I mean, if you heard Credence, you knew it was Fogerty, but yeah. So, well, that'd be cool. Good for him. Good for them heading up there. We're headed down south. Hopefully we get some nice weather down at the beach here over the next few days.
Yeah, I have not seen what the weather's going to be like over the next week or so. I know. I mean, we just ran an ad.
If there's not like a storm coming, then I'm prepared for hot and afternoon showers.
Just ran an ad during the I think it was between the shows for the cool thing they do at the beginning of July in Opelika every year, the bands, the salute, the
songwriters.
Yeah, the July 4th related thing they do at the salute with the bands and everything. Mm-hmm. They've it's a 70 something annual they got coming up this year, but a lot of cool July 4th related festivities. That's obviously subject to weather. You know what I mean? Between your fireworks shows and your salute to Americas and your what have yous. But it's hopefully the weather cooperates over the next week or so and everybody can enjoy end of June, beginning of July. And don't forget we're covering media days pretty extensively in just a couple of weeks as well.
Yeah, so that is getting here quickly. I mean, that starts on the 14th.
Yeah, this is today's Thursday, so 3 weeks from today will be the end of our coverage. Is that right? Do I have my math correct on that? Check a calendar.
Yeah, that should be right.
I believe three weeks because
next week is the 4th is on a Friday, then the 11th, 18th, 17th is the last day.
3 weeks from today, it's going to be the Thursday where they're sort of chasing us out of media days because mm-hmm. they're flickering.
What day is Auburn?
Auburn's Tuesday. I believe Auburn and Georgia.
Auburn and Georgia are the same day.
Justin mentioned
that.
It, and I think it's the Tuesday. I think it's before the All-Star game. I think Ferg's going to go up. Go up Monday,
see the
Derby, stay the night, Tuesday do the Auburn stuff, and then go to the All-Star game Thursday night.
That'll be a fun Tuesday.
Yeah, that'll be a whirlwind for and Ferg has Painter's wedding just a couple of days earlier, so he's flying in from like Vermont. I think on Sunday or Monday, wherever they're doing that up north. So I mean, busy stretch for our guy Justin Ferguson. I'll be, of course, at Media Days the entire week as well. Can't wait to visit all my friends in the small room.
What are they calling it? They've changed the name.
Oh no!
The of of the where the radio stations are. You know, it's always been Radio Row. I saw
now it's like
a
podcast
note.
Podcast place.
I saw a note that it's no, it's a cooler sounding name than that.
Podcastville.
Look at your emails from Chuck Dunlap over the last few days. Somewhere in there it mentions the new name for where all the radio shows are set up. But yeah, that'll be cool. That's one of the best things, is just getting a chance to see some folks that you don't get to see on a regular basis that cover other teams. And I'll correct myself as I'm looking up the Blue Ridge Rangers was actually John Fogerty's first solo album after the breakup of Creedence.
Okay, yeah.
And he is all of the Blue Ridge Rangers. He played every instrument.
Oh, neat.
Did all the background vocals and everything, so it is a legit solo album.
I love when an artist can do, you know, they're going to play every song or play every instrument and then find musicians to take it on tour or whatever. Like, yeah, that's always Dave Grohl did that with the first Foo Fighters album, and I think Trent Reznor did that with a couple of Nine Inch Nails albums. Like, this
McCartney did it with his first,
I think,
solo album.
Prince, I believe, plays until the new Power Generation comes along. I think Prince played every instrument. So yeah, it's a mark of a real talented artist. When you
do that. No question. All right, we're halfway done here on the Thursday Drive. Love for you to join us in hour number two, which is coming up.
The sports capital of Alabama. This is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in, hour number two of the Thursday Drive. It's clearing up a little bit. Been cloudy all day, and that's kept the temperatures down. So enjoy that. It's not very common at the end of June to have a day where the temperatures barely, if they even do, touch 80 degrees. Bill and Dan here in the studio on this Thursday. Drew is at the controls. As I mentioned, it's the second hour of the show. And hour number two is brought to you, as usual, by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. Love for you to join in. We talked about Auburn adding a quarterback commitment for the 2026 class. We'll go back over that as well. Just quick talk about the NBA draft. Duke with three of the top 10 picks, not a huge shock there.
Now, a lot of folks thought, I mean, Flagg's been the consensus number one throughout the whole process. Con Knipple and Malawak, you know, are both guys who have seen their stock rise steadily. Knipple was one of the better spot up catch and shoot guys in college basketball this year. Maybe a reach at four with some of the guys that have, I think higher, like, more star potential on the board, like Trey Johnson or Jeremiah Fears might be guys with higher ceilings.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're Charlotte, you feel like you've already got ball dominant guards and you'd like to find complementary pieces, even at four, like it's a little bit of not a reach, but it's a high pick for a guy that you think of as a complementary piece. But if you think he can really help you in today's NBA, go for it. Fears and Johnson both end up in pretty good spots. Total rebuilds for Johnson's at a total rebuild in Washington. He's a great player. Trey Johnson, you know, I would have liked to see him in maybe a more structured environment this year in college basketball. That was a pretty wide open system they were running at Texas, and there was a lot of give the ball to Trey Johnson and just sort of watch what's going on. But I think in the NBA, like, he's got the chance to develop into a really good player. Jeremiah Fears, keep in mind, this guy skipped a year. He was playing his high school senior year in the SEC past year, and was a very good guard. You know, was a really special player by the end of the season. you know, want to see what happens in New Orleans. Like that, you know, they've got some interesting pieces around him. You know, they're going to have to decide if they're rebuilding or going for it pretty soon. If they decide to rebuild, Jeremiah Fears could be a nice piece to have there for the Pelicans. Big shock is the fell at 16. Is it Yang Hansen?
Yeah, Yang Hansen.
Yang Hansen was someone that no draft analysts had in the first round. It was sort of a shocking pick. Folks look at him and they like he's a wild card. Like I know like the term that's being kicked around is like Chinese Nikola Jokic. Like he's like it, but again, a guy who is just, you know, like a lot of teams hadn't even scouted him. He was,
well, obviously, and obviously a couple had,
yes, but the Trailblazers, yeah, you know, making one of the more, it's rare to have a guy go that early in the draft that virtually nobody had, mm-hmm. and the buzz around them had been non-existent, and Yang Hansen Yang is a wild card. You know, it's just an unusual turn of events in the middle of the first round as the Blazers go with somebody who seems to have it's a lot of potential, but it's very the information on him seems kind of murky.
What is crazy, a couple of things that are crazy, is as dominant, you know, it's how different the sports are. Because as dominant as the SEC was, it doesn't translate the way it does in football or baseball. I mean, you see, you know, teams in the playoffs winning titles, yeah. things like that, and you expect in football and baseball, that's going to mean they're gonna have the most players taken. Five SEC players, that's nothing to be embarrassed about, but five SEC players taken in the first round of the NBA draft, whereas, you know, you look at Rutgers with two of the top five picks, and they can't even manage a 500 season at Rutgers.
Sure, and I think some of that is that you look and freshmen can go.
Oh yeah,
and they do go, and that's
what most of these guys are.
More than half of the first round this year, you know, selections were guys who were taken after just 1 year. In college basketball, but no, you're right. I mean, there does seem to be a difference between the way the SEC's dominance in football or baseball carries over to the draft versus, and this, I mean, look, dominant year for the SEC in men's basketball.
Absolutely, it was.
I mean, you had the national champion, you had two teams in the Final Four, you had four of the Elite Eight.
You had everyone saying this is the strongest conference in the history of college basketball.
You had, you know, 14 teams in the NCAA tournament.
Right.
I mean, it was a banner.
You know, two in the Final Four.
Exactly, banner year for the SEC, but it's not necessarily because the top teams in the SEC were loaded with players that people viewed as likely draft picks. I mean, not just you only have five SEC picks. One of them is Walter Clayton,
right? Who was a key, if not the key player on the national championship
but
team.
But it's not as though the first team All Conference SEC team is all
going to be high draft picks.
Is full of high draft picks. No,
right.
I mean, Jani Broom was SEC Player of the Year, mm-hmm. and he is still waiting.
Still waiting.
Still waiting to hear his name called. So I mean, I think it illustrates the difference between what college teams are doing and what NBA teams are sort of looking for. Mm-hmm. You know, the differences between the two sports or the two leagues. And it certainly doesn't take anything away from what the SEC accomplished this past year that it didn't necessarily translate to dominance in the NBA draft. But it is. It's certainly noticeable that you don't have, and like you said, it's not the same as it is in football or baseball, where especially in baseball now it just feels like routinely. Oh, football too. Yeah, I mean the thought that you're routinely like the top 15 is going to be just loaded with SEC players from different programs.
Oh yeah, that's exactly right. But as you said, it didn't change the fact of the SEC dominating in basketball as well. What did you think of the situation with Ace Bailey and his agent trying to not have him picked and then have him taken by the Jazz. He obviously wasn't happy.
Well, for
when that happened
for 30 something years,
crying.
And I know Scott Van Pelt talked about this a little bit too, and he's right that like for 30 something years, it's been so goofy that the NBA draft, because these trades haven't become official until July 1st, these guys have to go and wear hats for teams that they're never going to play for these teams.
Right.
Like the 13th pick has already been traded from Philadelphia to New Orleans.
I like it for future, you know, that will be announced at a later date.
And then the guy has to go up and put on a Philadelphia hat, even though he's already been traded. Yeah. Like he's the pick.
Well, he has to be property of them for them to be able to make the trade.
But it's so goofy that he has to then put on this hat of this organization that did not want him and did not select him with their pick, but did it sort of on behalf of another team, and it's just I wish there was a way to clear that up. Now that's not necessarily what's going on with Ace Bailey.
Yeah, no.
Ace Bailey sounded like someone who didn't looking at the draft. Ace Bailey would have liked to go. Like, look, you're going one or two. That's fine. Three was Philly. I think he had his heart set on maybe going to Philadelphia. They picked somebody else. It sounded like in his pre-draft process, he wasn't terribly interested in going to Charlotte or Utah.
Oh, no, yeah.
And sort of made that clear to the teams picking 4 and 5 that he thought he was a better fit, I guess, both in the organization and in the, you know, the local, the community. Like, he preferred sort of other destinations. Utah, you know, and I guess...
Well, Utah ain't Philly.
Well, some of the places... It's not just Philly, though. I think he was also looking at...
I know.
Like, Washington picks in the second half of the top 10.
Yeah, Washington had the next pick.
Toronto was right there as well. Brooklyn. I mean, there were major markets in the Northeast.
Right.
If that's sort of what Ace Bailey was playing at. But I think that Danny Ainge said... You know, I
want the best player available.
Either, but yeah, and that could, and look, could it be a play for like could he be eventually traded to one of these teams? Sure. Could Utah decide that he's going to be a professional who plays for the organization that selected him in the draft? I think that's sort of like it would be. We have not seen a situation where an NBA player was taken by a team he did not want to play for and sort of made it clear that was the case in a while. Like it's been a long time.
That's right.
Usually these games of chicken don't play out with the team actually taking the guy, or at least if it does, we don't hear about it. So yeah, I mean, I kind of spent a lot of the draft yesterday thinking, oh, Ace Bailey's going to be traded before this night's over. Like Utah's going to announce that Ace Bailey and Ace Bailey and the following assets are going to, you know, like I did figure that usually is the precursor for a draft night trade. That hasn't happened yet. The draft isn't over. You know, could Ace Bailey be the part of a different organization by the end of the draft today? Sure. But could Utah also decide we're calling his bluff and we think he is a great scorer who fits in and, you know, on a rebuilding team and could be part of something really special? Could they change his mind about Salt Lake City? You know, it's like maybe it turns out he'll spend some time in Salt Lake City
maybe.
And decide. You know,
he probably ought to at least. You know,
yeah.
If they don't deal him, I think he probably should at least see what it's like.
I think NBA players do have the option of if they don't sign their contracts. I think you can go back in the draft a year later. I think that's a thing in the NBA and the NFL.
In the meantime, what's he going to go overseas, I guess?
Or just spend a year getting ready for the NBA draft, stay at Rutgers and just not play? You know, take classes for a year at Rutgers. I think that's right where he would have that option. But we've never seen that with a lottery pick. And the thought of a guy like what, you know, how nervous would a team be about a guy who didn't like that he was taken fifth overall and sat out a year and didn't spend that year playing basketball. Like it would be and if you play basketball overseas, you run the risk of injury, and then who knows what happened to you. Like I would think that you just spend it working out and trying to build buzz and fix your stock. But I would think the easiest thing for Ace Bailey to do would be...
It'd be really hard. I mean, I don't know his family situation. It'd be really hard to turn down a year of that kind of money.
Sure, one would think. Although... He didn't go to Rutgers for free.
No, he didn't, but are they going to keep paying him?
No, not play? But one would think that he got a pretty, like, that was
the
talk that Harper,
but I mean,
Harper and Bailey both got.
But he's expecting to get even more now.
No, I agree. Like it would be a gambit to do anything but show up and be a pro.
Mm-hmm.
Like it would be a gambit to do anything. And the unfortunate thing is that I think Ace Bailey is like it's not because of Ace Bailey and Dylan Harper that Rutgers could it was.
Well,
like,
they're not the reason that they struggled this year.
I think they both were as advertised. Now they both probably needed to play better defense. But like they were both as advertised. And Ace Bailey is they made a point of talking about on the NBA draft broadcast last night that he is a difficult shot hitter. Like it's one thing to be a guy who can hit
open
yeah. but he's a guy who impresses pros with his ability to hit difficult contested shots with a guy all over him, you know, shots that make you wonder how it went in. And that's you know, he's got the, you know, he's got that kind of NBA game, and you know I kind of wish that was more of the story and less is he gonna be a prima donna, is he gonna be a diva and refuse to go play for the organization that selected him, because he could be a great pro. It's just it'd be a shame if it becomes about and you know, and it's weird how that can sometimes fade like that. Like people don't mention Eli Manning.
You know, people don't mention that
Eli Manning forced his way out of the team that drafted him on draft night back in 2004.
No, so, sometimes it works. Like you said, usually it works.
Yeah, and so you know, I would hope that it's you know that they can find some middle ground, they can find some resolution there, because if they can't, then Utah probably needs to explore.
Yeah,
because the stock will only drop, right?
Oh, you're right about that.
If you get the sense the marriage is in trouble, like the stock's only going
to
drop.
If it's obvious he's not going to play, then he's not worth as much.
Then you, Bill Cameron, GM of a team that might want Ace Bailey.
Oh yeah, I'll come with an offer that's definitely.
Is it going to be 100 cents?
Less than 100 cents on the dollar? Yeah, you're right.
100 cents.
You're right about that. No, not even close.
No way. So that's the situation Utah enters in when they take this guy. Mm-hmm. Is like, can they change his mind and get him to be? I don't even know if it's like a change his mind situation. Can they get this guy to buy in, or do they need to sell out?
Mm-hmm. All right, we'd love your thoughts. Again, we'll recap the story about Auburn adding a quarterback. Talk about whatever you'd like. 334-321-1390.
What do you think of Janai tonight? Like, I mean, what do you think of Janai's like future as a professional basketball player? Do you think it's in the NBA?
I just don't know. I mean, I would like for that to be the case, but I just wonder. I mean, I think his shot needs to improve for him to really be able to, you know, play in the NBA.
I do understand the idea that he's a man without a country, where it's like, is he big enough to be a five?
Yeah,
Is he big enough to be an NBA rim protecting five? And if the answer to that question is no,
do you think he is?
I don't know. There were times this year where I thought maybe, but there were also times where it was like he's more of a finesse big against these guys, and Dylan's doing the dirty work down low, and it's no. I think that aspects of his game could translate.
I mean, he's a good enough passer and. I mean, he does things well that could be a four, but he's got to shoot it better.
Right.
He's got to shoot it better.
And he's
and it can't just be open, you know, wide open threes where nobody comes out on it.
Yeah. He's probably someone with the game of a five and the body of a four.
Yeah.
That's a tough spot to be in mm-hmm. in the NBA. Now you can play basketball for a long time if that's your, especially with his skills, and you know, because when we say that he's got the game of a five and the body of a four in the NBA, he's got NBA, and that could, you know, in virtually any other professional basketball league in the world, a lot of leagues,
yes, he could be a. He could be a very good player for a long time.
I'd love to see it work in the NBA. Won't be surprised if it doesn't. I still think Janai Broome's going to play basketball for a very long time.
I agree.
Make a very comfortable living for himself. He can do a lot of other things when he wants to stop playing basketball, too. He's a bright guy. But I would think, Bill, a lot of stamps in the passport for Jahni Broome could
so.
Be.
I would think
you know could be in the future. Dylan probably doesn't get selected tonight.
I think Dylan may be better, maybe better being a free agent where he can sort of pick the best spot for him.
I think Dylan's going to be on a team by like this time tomorrow.
I would.
And I think
he's got a shot.
And I think Dylan Cardwell's going to go to Vegas and play in the summer league with a chance to like Dylan is someone who does not have Jahni Broome's ball skills or his shot from range. But because Dylan has maximized his physical abilities,
he's athletic,
and I think that you know he's someone who can more easily do a lot of the stuff that an NBA 5 is asked to do around the rim, defensively, setting screens, rebounding, putbacks. I think it's a little bit more tailored to success as a complementary piece for an NBA team that feels really good about their ball dominant options already. I don't think he's getting drafted tonight, but again, I think Dylan's on a team this time tomorrow, and I think Dylan Cardwell gets some run in the summer league from a team that maybe thinks let's find the Lakers are an example where it's like, you know what? We're spending a lot of money elsewhere. Let's find a budget-friendly option at center to contribute. Like, let's put together a patchwork sort of deal at the five with maybe a veteran who can't play a ton of minutes, maybe a and maybe an undrafted free agent or two like Dylan Cardwell. Like, that's one of several teams that could maybe push that button. But I think Dylan's got a chance to make a living here.
And again, just a reminder that coverage of round two of the NBA draft coming up on ESPN 106.7 tonight. Following the drive, 6:30, I think, is when they get started with round two. We need to get to our first break of hour number two. Love for you to join us here on the Thursday Drive.
The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill and Dan here in the studio, and you were just talking about a story. I did not see Ross Dellinger's story back last month. We had a conversation just in the last few days from someone, you know, talking about the fact that states are passing laws saying you don't have to that the NCAA or no entity can stop collectives or players doing things that might be against their rules.
Well, just doing some more research on sort of the post July 1st reality for college athletics. We were reading about Deloitte yesterday and sort of NIL Go, and there was some confusion during our conversation with Jake yesterday. I'm fairly certain that student athlete who enters into a deal for $600 or more
with anyone, because it said, it specifically said third party entities as well.
Here's what's crucial though, is that the clearinghouse, reading up on their protocols, like they're not going to be terribly concerned about if a national brand wants to offer a sponsorship to a student athlete. And it's an endorsement deal. Like that's not really what the clearinghouse is trying to stop.
No, the clearinghouse is for It's for smaller.
And it seems like it's really trying to run collectives out. Like that's what the clearinghouse is interested in. Are you an organization that just exists to help advance the athletic causes of this?
Collectives can and they will say that they are trying to enhance the name, image, and likeness of those players, but they'll have to prove that. They'll have to be okayed by the clearinghouse.
And if you have a connection to the university, the clearinghouse is going to take a much like yes. That's when you that's when you're subject to the 12 point mm-hmm. you know the 12 point review. The universities are gathering a lot of this data themselves as far as you know what the nature like I think it's basically who's providing the money, what's the nature of the endorsement, and is the person providing the money connected to the university in some way? Those are the big questions that the clearinghouse is going to have, and then they'll get into if the answer to some of those questions is yes, right? If it's about a person with longstanding ties to the athletic department is the one providing the money, then the clearinghouse is going to start. Now, interestingly, the clearinghouse is not in the business of declining these deals. The clearinghouse will tell the school, after providing all the information, clearinghouse tells the school and the student-athlete either it's cleared or they need more information or it's not cleared. Now, if they don't clear it, the student-athlete still has the – like they can make the decision as to whether or not they want to accept a deal that has not been
right,
cleared
by the clearinghouse.
Your eligibility could be the thing that you're risking there as a student-athlete if you
decide. But that would be left up to the conference. Right? The eligibility would be left up.
If it's a concern.
Or the CSC, I guess. is
as to what to do if you're yes. a – if you're a – yes.
If you're like, in violation or yes. If you have an agreement that hasn't been approved.
Or if a school decided to play an athlete who was – right. who shouldn't have been eligible. Like there's,
yeah, I would guess the school would be –
I would imagine that football and men's basketball programs would be very nervous about playing someone
so.
Who is you know who has entered into an agreement that and you know transactions have occurred with the clearinghouse not so you were asking about Dellinger's story with the plan for we've had someone ask about Michigan's laws regarding restricting NIL investigations
right.
Tennessee passed a law back in yep. May. That made it legal for collectives to still provide sponsorships and endorsements and money to student athletes that play, you know, for you know without schools being able to stop it. I believe that the leverage the conferences have is if you don't want to follow the rules set by the conference, there's the door. Like the thing they can do is sort of and Ross Dellinger mentioned arbitration agreements are being passed along. These were worked on during the during the review of the
settlement.
Of the settlement that if you're in the SEC or the Big Ten, you're going to abide by these CSC rules.
They have signed agreements that they are going to
as part of conference participation. You've signed these agreements, and I believe the agreements also. Suggest that you won't sue in court. You'll go to arbitration instead of suing in federal court. That's one of the key things, you know, to lawsuit proof in an attempt to lawsuit proof the CSC from the inside at least. But the I believe their big strategy is you know the leverage they have is. If you're in the Big Ten or the SEC or the Big 12 or the ACC right now, it would be a catastrophe to lose that. Like to be, I don't think there's
not to not be
to suddenly to suddenly lose your status as a member institution, to suddenly lose your membership in the country club would be a disaster because it's not like you can go join one of the other leagues if you're not complying with CSC rules. Not only would you lose your membership in your current conference, but you couldn't go join the Big Ten.
No,
if you're not
right.
compliant with,
you couldn't join any of the other Power Four schools.
And I think that would be the belief is that's going to be the powerful deterrent that keeps schools from because if push came to shove in Tennessee, I think if push came to shove in Tennessee and it came down to all right, well either Tennessee's governor needs to veto a law. Or Tennessee is going to get kicked out of the SEC. If it really came down to that, I think the law is getting vetoed. Like I don't think Tennessee is going to like if it was either Tennessee's out of the SEC or the governor vetoes this law. It's one or the other. I don't think the law is going to survive in that situation.
No, I don't think
so. I think that's the belief that they can use ejection from the club as a way to keep everyone. compliant and following these rules, I think is the, like, it's about using the leverage you've got. And I think the leverage that the CSC and the conference commissioners have right now is, I mean, think about the hole you, I mean, we were talking about budgets and things the other day. Think about the hole you blow in a budget of an athletic department if that SEC membership suddenly goes away.
Oh, man. Well, I mean, considering the expectation that next year, with the first year of the new college football playoffs, money coming in and the television revenue, it's going to be more than the capped revenue sharing per school. All of a sudden, if you don't have that, yeah, you're going to... Where are you gonna find that extra? It's gonna be, you're gonna have to do more than add $300 to your student fees.
It's warm and cozy inside the country club, and it's cold and harsh outside. So I think that's what's gonna, you know, I would think that's the plan to keep everyone, you know, on the same page and keep state laws from, because that was one of the concerns, was that. What you can't have a system. Greg Sankey has said this. You can't have a system where 16 teams are in the same conference and the laws about what's allowed in recruiting vary state to state.
Right.
Like you can't have a league.
No, they need to be playing by the same rules. If you're in the same in every league, they need to be playing by the same rules. And you know, preferably. Everybody at that level needs to be playing by the same rules.
And I would think that that's, you know, if the way you, you know, what one way you would enforce that is by saying if you're going to be in a major conference, if you're going to have one of the very valuable spots at the table in the SEC, the ACC, Big Ten, or the Big 12, you've agreed to follow these rules no matter what your state law allows, no matter what state and local regulations say, you've agreed to follow these conference rules. And if you don't want to do that, then there's the door.
Good luck.
The snow is falling outside, and you can try to. Because how about this? How do you cobble together a schedule?
Yeah.
Like suppose you're a school in the SEC ejected for noncompliance from these rules because you wanted to make a stand about, you know, whatever. What's your football schedule look like this fall? I mean, I guess Oregon State and Washington State had to figure this out
because
their leagues evaporated. But like you don't want to be an SEC team suddenly in that situation, unless you like seeing empty seats at the football stadium. But
Who are you going to be playing for those? I mean, yeah, that's the big question. Hey, I've come across a couple of other interesting things as well, but I think we need to get to our bottom of the hour break, running a little behind. Again, you can join in, 334-321-1390. We've got about 20 minutes to go here on the Thursday Drive.
ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill and Dan, Drew at the controls. All right, I saw something that when I saw it, it's like, wait, I still don't understand the benefit of this, but you know, I was mentioning yesterday that on Wimp and Barry Sanderson show yesterday, where I was on with them, they had mentioned that Greg Byrne, Alabama's AD, said that they would be giving an extra $2.5 million in scholarships, which would reduce the amount of money that they were was going to be available for revenue sharing, and didn't understand it then. But I see in a Ross Dellinger story from a couple of weeks ago, where he quotes Ohio State Athletics Director Ross Bjork saying he expects the cap on revenue sharing to break $25 million by year four, but said there are exceptions that can artificially lower the annual cap, most notably up to $2.5 million in additional scholarship that a school offers. I understand how that does, but how does that, if other schools are share, are distributing $20.5 million in revenue to its athletes, and you're only distributing $18 million. How is that beneficial?
Do you have to count that money against the revenue sharing money? Like, would that be like? Is it something where if you added scholarships this year?
Well, you're going to have to be adding scholarships though under the settlement.
Yeah,
you're going to have to be adding scholarships
because what we were just talking about during the commercial break is that I sort of understand that you're spending $2.5 million more on scholarships than you did last year, and so you're counting that $2.5 million against your $20.5 million in revenue. That's the premise here. Like, I don't understand if you can spend the money on scholarships and also distribute $20.5 million in revenue sharing.
Wouldn't that give you a better opportunity of being competitive than with other schools that might be spending the $20.5 million?
It's like in a salary. The example we're making in a salary cap sport, choosing to only go to 90%. The salary cap as a team.
Because you have other expenses.
Now, if the entire league is doing 90%.
Yes. Now, see, that's I'm thinking that must be what is going on. I wouldn't be surprised. And that's something to ask Greg Sankey.
File that one away, too.
At SEC Media Days. Is the SEC or are the Power Four schools all going to, write that off? Subtract that from the money that they are sharing.
Because Greg Byrne does not seem to be in the business of
pinching pennies,
or making decisions that make it harder for Alabama to compete.
Standing
in the way of Alabama coaches trying to win games. Like he doesn't have that job because he's done that.
You're right about that.
So it would be a surprise that's there must be a financial benefit. That's other than just saving $2.5 million, because you could seemingly save $2.5 million.
You could find
$2.5 million to save without withholding any of that $20.5 million.
I absolutely can imagine that it's just something that all the commissioners and the ADs have gotten together and said, all right, we have to do this, but since we have to give these scholarships, we only have to distribute 18. Everybody just go 18.
We talked about it earlier in the week, and I still can't imagine a scenario where, I can imagine, but it's just got to be so much more difficult if you're trying to take that $20.5 million and adjust because the rosters change over the course of the year.
That's something I really am interested in how, how the money is counted.
From
academic year to, over athletic season.
I would encourage, my thinking would be that you divide in August or whatever, in July, you divide the $20.5 million into however much each sport gets over the court, like for the year. Okay. And then I would think that your GM of that sport divides the money and it's like game checks. You get one twelfth of your revenue sharing money after the day after the first game of the season. You get 1/12 of it the day after, and because trying to do it and tie it to recruiting, trying to give it to guys who show up in January.
How do you do it with them though? Do they get 1/18th?
What do you mean?
That come in at midterm.
I would think that if you're a football player who switches teams in January, you're not getting any revenue sharing money from your new team until July or August. Because you just got revenue sharing money.
If everybody did it that way,
that
would be understandable. I just wonder if that would maybe delay some players getting into the portal.
Because how about this?
If you're getting 1/12th as it goes along and you transfer, you're not going to keep getting that money from the school that you're transferring from.
But it would be after every game, right? So if I'm giving you 1/12,
you're talking about per game.
So
you're only doing it for the season.
I'm doing you're getting 1/12 of your money after each. Like
I don't
that.
Know about
I,
that.
I would think that's how you're.
I thought you were doing it by month.
I'm thinking it's a 12-game regular season.
Yeah, and we've promised you postseason. What are you getting postseason?
Do you get more revenue sharing money because your team's in the postseason?
I don't know.
I would think that it's...
I mean, that's a really good question. See, said 1/12, I was just thinking, okay, you're getting a monthly check.
I was thinking game checks. I'm thinking it's 1/12 the money and it's after every game for college football. I would think that's how you... And because here's the other thing. If you're given
I just wonder, it's like, oh, yeah, okay, during the season, I'm getting this much more money, and all of a sudden the season's over. I'm supposed to go out and practice, and I'm not getting squat.
I don't know. I mean, it's...
I just don't know.
How about this, Bill? If you join a team in January and you get some revenue sharing money, you know what I'm about to ask, don't you? If you get a bunch of money to come join a team, if you get a bunch of revenue sharing money in January, what happens when you're in the portal again in May?
Well, what's happened with NIL money? You don't think any of those guys have cashed the checks but I wonder, and then jumped back in the portal again?
Yeah, I wonder if there's protections for, and that's another reason why you might want to tie that to game checks, where it's like you can't a guy getting 1/12 of his money after each game on Saturday in college football season. You know, you're not as worried about what happens when he goes in the portal in January. Well,
that also would. Make it a little less desirable to go ahead and say, you know, I'm finishing playing after game six and going to go in the portal. It's like, okay, you're not getting any money for the next 6 weeks either.
I would just think that would be...
That is a great question. Yeah. I have not heard that addressed by anyone.
I wonder if there's an industry standard, or if schools are sort of, especially this year, if schools are sort of figuring it out. I wonder if they're going
to
be...
I think a lot of schools are still trying to figure out exactly how this is going to work.
I know
how and when they're going to distribute
this money. There have been a couple of partnerships which we speculated on. I know the NIL Go is the Deloitte, mm-hmm. like it's an online portal where you can submit documents and things. I believe some schools announced, maybe some conferences announced, PayPal is going to be their method of distributing revenue to players, and they've got like partnerships with you're gonna have players getting their revenue checks wired to them through PayPal. I imagine PayPal probably paid for some exclusivity there.
Get this, all right. I'm reading more, and there's some really interesting things in here. It talks about NIL Go. It says Deloitte is expected to approve or disapprove deals in as little as one day, and it gives an example. It says Deloitte may deem a submitted $100,000 deal between an athlete and a third party to actually be valued at $50,000, and the player can either renegotiate and sign for the suggested figure, or the school can cover the difference by taking that away from their revenue pool cap.
Yes.
So that would mean, that's what I was wondering, do you keep some in reserve? Ooh.
One would think. I mean,
I wonder how much you'd keep in reserve. You maybe keep a lot in reserve. And
keeping a lot in reserve is going to be a tough sell too, though, right? I mean, because that...
Well, and as we were hearing with Jason yesterday, you know, he feels that Auburn's got an awful lot of that sunk into retention of players on the roster.
I mean, we don't know how much revenue sharing came up in recruiting over the last 9 months. Yep. When you're talking about players who could have gone in the portal in December? Players who could have, because it had to inform their decision. Players who could have gone to the portal in December had to be thinking, there's a $20.5 million revenue sharing deal. I mean, even in December.
Oh, no. I mean, this story here talked about that look, that's why there were so many players this year. They had to get deals done before July 1st, because anything before July 1st did not figure, it had to be agreed on and paid before July 1st to not figure into this current deal.
I would think that a lot of the negotiations over the last 9 months or a year with regards to football players and men's basketball players deciding where they want to go to school, I would think this $20.5 million revenue sharing deal and how big of a slice of the pie do I get? Mm-hmm. I think that question had to come up a lot. Once July 1st rolls around, the pies start coming out of the oven, and you start slicing them up. And you know, we got the news today that PayPal is going to be the way that, you know, pretty soon. I mean, you think about the Bo Nix. Think about the world we entered when Bo Nix did the Milo's tweet, right? We're going to be in a world pretty soon where athletes are getting direct revenue sharing payments, quarterbacks, football play, you know, right. You know, they're getting direct payments from the school, you know, as you know, not, I mean, more it's not salary, but it's another step towards that sort of professionalization. And I have to imagine players have been figuring out where they fit in, you know, for a lot of time.
Yeah. So again, I mean, the more we talk, the more questions. I mean, you know, the more we look at it, the more questions there are. We need to get to our final break of the afternoon. Stick with us here on the Thursday Drive.
You can help us.